Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Letters to Surviving Head Trauma and Responses. Hi, welcome to another episode of Surviving Head Trauma. Tonight is Thursday, January 25th, 2024. Ain't no dominee. So here we are. Welcome again to our fourth Thursday of each month. We broadcast live on the Brain Injury Radio Network. I'm Terry Smith, your host, and wherever you are on our planet, whatever time of the day, morning, noon, or night, we welcome you and wish you love. Love, yes. And if you're listening to an archived show, that means you've missed us live, but we are happy to have you, and we hope you get something from tonight's episode. We're going to talk with our audience. In their letters, at least, what they write to us and what they want to hear, what you want to hear, what you want to discuss. We're going to read some of your letters and many of the replies you have been given from our listening audience. So stay tuned. We will talk about that tonight. And that includes a myriad of topics from what do we do with the future? Is it true that brain trauma will cause cognitive impairment later in life, even worse, all kinds of questions. Does it kill compassion, empathy? Right after this message from Brain Injury Association of America.
A brain injury can change the way you think, the way you act, the way you move, and the way you feel. If you or someone close to you has experienced a brain injury, you are not alone. More than 2.5 million children and adults sustain brain injuries in the United States each year. For help, call the Brain Injury Association of America at 1-800-444-6443, on the web at www.biausa.org. Get the help you need today.
BIAUSA.org. Wherever you live in the United States, at least you can find a chapter or an office near you to get guidance, because sometimes in the beginning of this new life, this traumatic brain injury or brain trauma experience, you need some type of assistance. And this organization, Brain Injury Association of America, is that group for you. So reach out to them and may they help you. We'd like to give you the phone number. So if you have a pen or paper or keyboard, you can type this number in. Feel free to join us in this conversation tonight with our letters from listeners. The area code is 424-243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And if you'd like to speak on air while we're live, press 1 on your phone and an emoji will go up on my switchboard and I will see that you'd like to speak and I will bring you on if there is time between topics and conversations. If you'd like to speak, feel free to call us tonight. And we'd like to thank Craig Cecilia, who is the network owner and keeps the electricity running around here, all the bills paid, so that we can have this voice in this silent epidemic on Brain Injury Radio Network. And Kim Justice, who is the manager who manages all of the shows. Every night of the week, you can find something here on this network discussing some form or impact or result of brain trauma, brain, anything related is on this network, Brain Injury Radio. tune in nightly. And especially the fourth Thursday of each month when we broadcast Surviving Head Trauma with Terry Smith and occasionally Michelle, sometimes Angela. But we're always here with something for you. And we want to remind you that I wrote the book on surviving head trauma. In fact, it's called Surviving Head Trauma. And you can order that anywhere books are sold. And it's also a page on Facebook, Surviving Head Trauma. If you visit the page, you will find something posted every day, and we will reply to your comments there. If you'd like to send a letter of your own, you can do that in direct message on Facebook, Surviving Head Trauma. You may also reach us at terrysmithbooks.com, and you'll also find all of the previously recorded episodes of this show on podcast tab, so you can check out former broadcasts, and you can drop us a note or a letter or whatever you'd like to say or have discussed on the show. We're always open for new ideas and new issues we'd like to bring to the voice of this silent epidemic. So with that said, we will jump into a topic. Remember, you can call us anytime. If you hear something you'd like to add or question, call us. The first question tonight, or rather it's a statement and a question. I read today, this anonymous person says, I read today that brain injuries can cause a lack of compassion. I feel this on monumental levels and hate it. Does anyone else experience this and or have an explanation as to why this happens? Well, let's see. We'll go over some comments first, and then we'll maybe type in a request for a professional answer from a trained maybe psychologist or someone. But Gerard says in his reply, I have both too much compassion with some things, but I feel like I don't have enough compassion at the same time. It depends on what it is I'm going through at the time. Either way, I don't like it and wish I could be the way I was pre-injury. So that's probably a general consensus. We'd like that if we could go to pre-injury conditions. But that's not always the case. So we do the best we can. And research has shown us that, yeah, there can be some lack of empathy. And Gerard continues to say, though, that he knows that there's a reality to his experience. It says, I just can't tell when to let my imagination stop and when to see the reality. So yeah, that's again, we often question our own emotions because we are our biggest critics sometimes. So sometimes we let the questions drive us into a rabbit hole. And sometimes that rabbit hole can make us Google answers that have us already passed away. So we or in a mental institution. So we really need to be careful of how we address our curiosities and how we research our information. Now, another person who responded to this thinks that writing about your emotions every day can help you quite vividly see your issues and how you handle situations that otherwise might make you think that you're empathetic, but when you read your actual behavior, your results, you might see more objectively, more clinically, that maybe you did not handle a situation as compassionately as possible. So that's a good idea. Taking notes often helps us see things that we otherwise might miss. So journaling is an excellent idea. And we thank you for that, Gerard. That's a good idea. Let's go to the next page and see what's happening. Colleen says, I just realized this. I've always been extremely empathetic towards others. But yesterday I realized I don't feel bad for the man who caused the wreck and died. I don't feel bad for his wife who ended up overdosing last week. Well, that's a That's a tough one. We sometimes don't control all the emotions that are somewhat involuntary that we feel. And sometimes someone who's caused us great havoc or great pain, grief, if you will, sometimes that retaliation or that justification, or if we want to go so far as to say karmic feedback, might make us feel good at the time, but we wonder if that can be a cancerous feeling in the long haul, that untamable rage doesn't quite become quenched. It becomes fueled, maybe. So that's a tough one to decide what's right or wrong. Is it involuntary and we don't really control it, but simply react instinctively, sometimes irrationally? Colleen also adds, that makes sense. I'm super empathetic towards the underdog. But as for those causing suffering in the world, I want them to suffer. It kind of goes back to something I think Dr. King said. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. So I don't know how deep we want to get philosophically, but certainly carrying that type of cancerous emotion can't be healthy. I'm sure many of you can see the simplicity in that. You feel such rage and hatred, and at some point it's going to manifest in ways that aren't healthy, like music for plants. If you play classical music or something romantic, soft, whatever the positive side of music can be, the plants thrive and grow. Chaotic noise sounding music makes them wither and die. So if plants are affected by a simple sound or music in a closed chamber, think about the power of our minds inside and what and how and when we think affects us. Now, Colleen continues to say, I don't feel love for my children the way I used to, and it makes me feel very guilty and ashamed. Again, we're going back to involuntary feelings. I'm sure that there are triggers that these children might have, as children will have triggers for most sane, rational people. So a traumatically injured brain is maybe likely to respond differently, and those triggers might manifest in I don't like them, love them, or want them around anymore. But we then see from journaling maybe that behavior is not rational. It's exaggerated consequence perhaps of something neurological and maybe worthy of reconsideration, and not immediately fall into that rabbit hole that our first instincts might make us think we are empathetic and hateful, which isn't always the case. Sometimes it's something that time will remedy. Time has a way of doing that with most things in life. Stephanie says her injury was frontal and she feels anger dangerously, but a lot of other emotions, not at all. Stephanie, that's not an unusual reality for those of us who have survived traumatic brain injury. At anger, it's one of the forefronts of our new personality, if you will, the changed person. So we, again, rely on time to tame what seems uncontrollable, as if the rage won't ever die. But it does die. It does in time, calm at least. It calms to the level of being functional, so that you learn in time rather how to renegotiate in your mind how you deal with other people, other realities that you can't control, situations that happen without your impact, even the traffic, for someone cutting you in front of you quickly in traffic, or not having a turn signal on, and you could have made the turn if this person hadn't used the had used the turn signal, or if you're driving at 90 miles an hour and somebody in front of you is driving at 70 miles an hour in the passing lane, which makes absolutely no sense. It's like something from the Twilight Zone. I don't understand why people do that, but there are people who do that, drive slow in the passing lane. And a lot of scientists have said that speed kills. No, I mean, yeah, maybe, but speed doesn't kill as much as a road hazard. Someone driving in that passing lane is going to make someone who is speeding change lanes. And that's when the accidents start happening. Accidents can be saved from speed dangers by simply following the rules of the road. Don't drive in the passing lane if you're going slower than someone behind you. Move over way before they approach. Use your mirrors to see cars approaching you. If there's a space ahead of you, get out of the way so that the person behind you can continue. Even if they're breaking the law, it's not your job to describe how fast someone should go. If they want to break the law and drive 200 miles an hour, get out of the lane so that they can pass you and not create an accident. So I don't play speed kills as much as bad drivers who drive in the wrong lane and don't know when to get out of the way. Yet I digress. Back on track. Stephanie feels anger dangerously, but a lot of other emotions and not at all. I'm sure I digress too much with that driving thing, but that's one of my triggers. I tell you, get out of the lane. If you're not passing someone and there's room ahead of you to let the person behind you go faster and continue their path, even if it is illegal, it's not your job. You're not a cop. Yet I digress again. We're back on track with emotions. Again, like my example just now, me getting the thought in my mind of people driving in the wrong lane, creating accidents, are triggers that sometimes we don't want to fall into that rabbit hole, but we do. So we find ways to come out of it. It doesn't mean that we're emotionally void or apathetic about other people or feelings. Certain things are just very ideal in our minds and we have compassion for those feelings and those ideals. Like, I believe people should not drive in the fast lane if they're going too slow. But we all have something, and those are the things we maybe through journaling we'll see. And once we see them, identify them, we then work on a structured way of resolving the conflict that they may present. If they do present a conflict, then it's something that we should teach ourselves if we don't learn from someone else how to climb out of that rabbit hole, how to get over the issue, because it can be overcome. Most issues that we get as a result of brain trauma can be overcome. Memory, many of us lose memory. Taking notes, take better notes. If you don't remember something, take a note. You won't get everything recorded and written, but think of the things you will get done because you remember by simply reading the notes that you've left. So initially, memory, but anger, yeah. One of the first things in the beginning of our journey is that rage, that anger. And again, with time, we were saying we develop our own techniques, our own scoping skills, if you will, on how to navigate through that madness. Because it's like it's madness, and it's not something that's unique to the surviving head trauma community. Our brain injuries are not much unlike someone who has not had a brain injury but still has a short fuse, a low tolerance for whatever contradicts their focus, their direction. So we like. They must work on coping skills and recognizing the difference between a natural reaction to a situation versus not having compassion or being emotionally void, if you will. Christy says her son has even voiced that he doesn't feel anymore, and she thinks that it concerns him almost as much as it does her, but she's not sure what can be done since he refuses counseling or therapy of any kind. Well, Christy, you can't make someone see something that they aren't ready. I mean, we know that everything comes in time, even recognizing our own issues. So if your son doesn't see it now, it doesn't mean that he won't see it as he gets older. Even if it's from the consequences of his not feeling and his not going to counseling and he does stupid thing after stupid thing. The person cutting him off in traffic or driving slow in the fast lane and he rams into the back of their car will create consequences that will force him, if he doesn't do it voluntarily, to identify and then address those issues that made him ram his car into the back of someone driving in the slow lane, because we can't do that in a civilized society, even if we do have traumatic brain injury. So Christy, we wish you the best with dealing with your son, and we hope that your son sees sooner than later that asking for help, seeking help, is not a sign of weakness whatsoever, but it's a sign of strength that you're willing and ready to grow from where you think you reached, and you think that that places everything, and it's not. There's always more to learn. So let's move on. We're going to take our time tonight. I am practicing for the new year. I don't know if you've made resolutions or not, but many of us make them, but how many of us keep them throughout the year? I'm working on not talking so fast. That's my new thing this year. I'm going to try to speak at a more relaxed speed. I sometimes get caught up in trying to get everything out so fast that I lose you. I lose some of my audience because I speak too fast. This year, I'm going to try to slow it down and get my point out and not lose you because of the speed. So there, calm it down and focus on the issue. And that is, do we lose our emotional capacity to feel emotions, feel for others, compassion, empathy, or does brain trauma erase that? That's the first topic tonight that we're addressing from your letters. Feel free to write us at Surviving Head Trauma. To reach us, you may do that. One of the ways to do it is on Facebook, on Surviving Head Trauma page, direct messages there with your letters, or you can write us to my website, Terry@TerrySmithBooks.com, on Surviving Head Trauma. Anything you'd like to address, put it in the letter and send it, and maybe we'll pull your letter up and see what responses have been posted. Now, let's see what Pat has to say. Pat said that I did lack compassion, empathy for a few years early on, but then it gradually came back as the years passed. So there's another example of it taking time and it being our emotional reaction, our emotional vulnerability, and our willingness to work on those things that we've identified as unhealthy or perhaps something we can improve. And the testimony here says, I did lack compassion, empathy for a few years early on, but then it gradually came back as the years passed. So Pat, thank you for making that note, because oftentimes we can get so caught up in the reality of the now, the here, the way I am at this moment since the brain trauma. Will it always be this way? How can this possibly get better? It seems so just concrete, so absolute, as if it's unbulging, so stable, so rigid that it will always forever be this way. No, it won't necessarily always be that way. Certain things may always exist, but how we deal with that existence depends upon our level of wisdom. And that wisdom is something we get from time and experience. The longer we live with brain trauma, the longer we have to develop coping skills. But in order to apply these skills, we must identify the issues that need addressing. That's the only way we can grow. And in this moment, we're talking about empathy and compassion. Do we lose it? or can we refine it to brain trauma? I have something from Sean saying the brain is very complex. Depending on where your injury is, it could happen. I guess he means, Sean, thank you, to everyone. Anyone with a brain trauma could have this happen. And that's true, because there are certain, I mean, every brain trauma is like a snowflake. It's literally, everyone is different. I mean, we could have the same injury to the same region of the brain, but like individual snowflakes, that person is going to make the difference between one neuron going in one direction and someone else with the same injury making the neuron go in a different direction by their own thought process, their own mindset. So the brain is very complex. Yes, Sean. And depending on where your injury happens, it could happen to anyone. So yes, that's another fact. There are certain physiological realities that do make certain symptoms or consequences of brain trauma more prevalent in consistency, and that's like anger, we talked about earlier, anger, memory deficit, severely impaired memory is one of the big things, and severely short-fused tempers. So those two are at the top of the list. There's so many other, the list goes on and on, but we're just dealing tonight with one topic at a time, and we will cover hopefully quite a few before we exhaust our time on this Brain Injury Radio Network. It's until midnight tonight. So I see a lot of people have called the switchboard. I see you on the switchboard. But remember, once you're in queue, if you press 1 on your phone and like would like to comment on something we're discussing here tonight, I will see you and bring you on the air. If you would still like to call us, we're in country code 1 if you're calling outside the United States. If you're inside, we're area code 424-243-9540. Give us a call if you'd like to join this conversation. Let's see what Elise says. I'm a TBI survivor from 97. I guess that's 1997, and I used to feel like then in the beginning, but now I'm a crybaby. Just remember that no TBI is ever the same. Just give it time. God bless. We were just saying that even though we may have the same injury in the same region of the brain, each person is going to be so unique that brain injury is going to be different for each person. So, yeah, Elise says that in 97, survivor from 97, that's quite a long time. But it's true that time does have a way. And we were just saying that earlier as well. Time is on our side if we use that time constructively, wisely, and understand that whatever seems so solid and final is not always the case. It's a matter of how we deal with it in our experience and how we practice what we learn. So we now can move on to someone else here. Let's see. Samantha says, I feel a lot of anger and I don't know how much to control it. No, I'm sorry. I don't know how to control it besides locking myself into my bathroom and breathing. All right, Samantha, that sounds, it sounds, maybe you're saying, okay, that's a bit harsh, but no, actually isolation and deep breathing could be a fantastic way to deal with those moments of anger and those times of rage. Isolation, removing yourself, certainly, from the situation, from the scene, if you will, might reduce the immediacy of it all, the great impact of it all. So that separation will allow you to do those breathing techniques, that breathing exercise, inhaling the scent of a flower, if you will, the smell, deep breath to smell the flower. And then exhale as if to blow out the candle. So we take a deep breath, maybe a scented candle, to take the scent of the candle. And then an exhale to extinguish the flame, to blow out the candle. So those breathing techniques really do work, but it's hard to take deep breaths and meditate about the scent of a candle when we're fuming about somebody driving in the passing lane, the speed of the slow lane. So we in time learn to modify the reaction. So rather than screaming at the top of our lungs in our car at this person who won't move over because, well, I'm driving the speed limit. If they want to drive so fast, tell them to go around me. No, that's the road hazard. That's the road danger, because people who are driving fast obviously are on edge or need to take breathing techniques. So them moving around to go around you is more likely to cause an accident than if you saw them approaching your rearview mirror and moving over, they could just keep going and maybe not have an accident. But the person speeding behind you is obviously in some situation that you don't understand. So the person driving, this person in front of you is in a situation that you may not understand. Maybe that person is ill or just not cognitively capable of understanding to get out of the way. So we learn to take a deep breath so that moving yourself from the situation, removing yourself from the scene and taking those deep breaths is not from the tone that you wrote it in is a bad thing. At least that's my inference from what I read, that it's a bad thing. You feel a lot of anger. You don't know how to control it. So you lock yourself in the bathroom and breathe. I think it's a great thing. Work on that. When you're in a situation where you can leave the room, do that. You're driving behind that person in the passing lane and they're driving 8 miles an hour and you're trying to do 97. Not that you should be driving that fast, because it's not usually a good idea, but if you have to and are stuck behind someone in the wrong lane, we can't go to another room. We can't leave the scene, if you will. We can redirect our neurons, our thought process. We can say, okay, this person, something is wrong with this person. They obviously see, they can see, unless they just don't care. In that case, there's something even deeper wrong with them. So I need to get myself together. I am responsible for how I handle this, how I react to this. I'm doing 110, so changing lanes isn't the smartest thing. Maybe I should slow down. Maybe I should drive a little slower. Or whatever the situation, each situation may be different. Sometimes you can talk to yourself, maybe this person is in front of me as a sign to remind me how recklessly I may be driving. Maybe I should slow down. And then that moment, maybe that person will move out of the way and you can drive at a more sensible speed. But still, that person is out of the way. And you're calm, you haven't created an accident, because you've learned to redirect your thoughts. Neuroplasticity, redirecting the neurons in our thought process. When something is triggering us in a negative way, we think of something positive immediately and replace the negative thought with the positive. We redirect those thoughts. Now, Donna Ray says, I feel flat. If I'd love you before the injury, I can't still feel love. After I care, but it's not the same. It's more of acting the part. Okay, I think what she's saying is that she feels flat and she'd like to love you the way she did before the injury, but she can't. She can't feel, oh my goodness, this is serious. Feel as if she's acting the part. I don't know how to address that one, Donna. We should always, I mean, I don't know. There's no always. Always is an absolute, very few absolutes. But I don't believe that acting the part is a healthy way to live. I mean, we have to acknowledge who we are. And if we know who we are and are ourselves, I think there's more of a natural fit into reality than as if we then if we are acting to fit in, if you will, maybe that's what you mean, acting the part, because you, someone loves you and you're supposed to love them back, so you act the part. That's not necessarily healthy. I think it's probably a disservice to your getting from life what life has to offer. Because if you're not being yourself and acting the part to facilitate some love that's not sincere, then you're not only doing yourself a disservice, but the other person as well. So that's two of you in a situation that isn't real, because you're not being real with yourself, acting the part. Acting the part should simply be being yourself. I know it sounds easy when you're sitting behind a microphone in the studio talking about a letter you're reading and notes around that letter, but from experience, and I have 39 and a half years of living with a severely damaged brain, I flatlined twice during brain surgery, and my memory stopped working. So I've learned so many skills over the years that I think that I've learned enough to at least give an opinion about an issue like this, about acting out the part, because life is so precious and is not guaranteed to last another hour, another half hour, another minute. Sometimes death comes so quickly, we die with our eyes open. We don't close that blink, complete the blink. So act as yourself and learn to understand yourself, because sometimes that's one of the hardest lessons about learning who we are. So learn who we are and do the best we can to deal with our realities, either post-trauma or never having trauma. We all have issues that need some type of attention that we can ignore or can address. Now, Donna continues to say that after she just said that it's more the acting part, she says that that's what I feel like I'm acting out love and have this so what attitude when it comes to compassion. So that's another testimony to brain trauma leaving someone as if they don't feel. And it's not something that's psychosomatic. It's something that's real. If it is psychosomatic, sometimes doctors may say, yeah, it's in your mind. But at the same token, there's this physiological boundary that is not quite defined in the brain, the gray matter of our brain. And we don't know what is physically altered when the tissue is bruised or removed, because oftentimes brain trauma does involve parts of the brain being physically removed, cut out surgically or violently removed from impact or trauma. So is it physiological? Is it neurological? Is it psychological? The point is, if it exists and we plan to continue existing, we find ways to work around it and trust that in time, if we work with it, time will at least teach us coping skills, which will help us at least not hurt other people by leading them down a road of not necessarily insincerity, but acting the part sounds as if it's something contrived, something forced, something unnatural, something unreal, something untrue. And ultimately those things sometimes, well, we say ultimately, but really we don't know. It's not a healthy way of living. We know that, but it can lead to all kinds of unplanned disasters. So people respond differently when they're hurt, or they find out that you've been acting the part and that love is not reciprocated or returned. So keeping it real, if you will, is the way to go. Keeping it real. Let's see, I'm trying to stay on track here with our pages. It's been digitized for studio ease of reading. By the same token, if I press the wrong button, things go quickly and disappear. So I'm trying to go back here. Going back to, here we go, Donna. This is one we read about Donna and Susie acting the part. So now the next one, Stephen says, I do struggle to find compassion for the compassionless nitwits. All right, that sounds like the person driving behind the slow person in the passing lane. If that's what it takes, if you need to call someone a nitwit to help you deal with your issues, as long as you're not saying it or doing it in a way to that person, if it's just to yourself in your mind, that's your way of dealing with it. Just don't confront other people that way. It's about how we other people, I think, that makes the big difference. Sometimes it's the tone in which we use to speak with other people. It's not always what we say. Sometimes it's just how we deliver our message. In fact, we lose some of our audience, most of our audience, if we attack, go into that attack mode, trying to express your point. The point's completely lost when you come off like a raving lunatic. So even though we're brain trauma survivors, we're not Neanderthals or junkyard dogs, if you will. We're able to speak civilly. I mean, even in a fit of rage, a deep breath can change the way we might say the word no. 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 There's so many different ways to say it. Sometimes if we take a deep breath, that no might come out as no instead. Or maybe you don't know the answer. If you're in a state of rage, you don't see nearly as well. It's like the boiling water. When the water is boiling, you can't see the clarity. And that it's full of rage and heat, not in boiling status. The clarity is gone. It's still, you can see through it. Because it's clear. There's clarity in it. So we learn to take that deep breath, remove ourselves from that situation if we can. And if we're driving or in a situation where we cannot remove ourselves, it's about mental adjustments we can make, because we can always reach inside our minds. We have that power if we can still think. So as long as we can still think, we can adjust that mind. Now, we'll get to some more replies to the initial question. Does brain trauma make you lose your mind? Or at least your compassion and your ability to feel for others, empathy? Let's listen to a song. We'll take a music break and then we'll come back. Let's make sure that we can always rise to the occasion. It requires us adjusting our mindset so that we can continue our life journey without falling in our own mislaid tracks or tripping someone else's journey on our mislaid tracks. We rise to the occasion and take a deep breath. cook, rise to the occasion. That's C-Y-N-D-I, Cindy Cook, Z-O-O-K. Check her out on YouTube. And we'd like to thank her for letting us play her music, her original sound on Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. If you make music, a band, an artist, and own the rights and would like to have your music played on our show, drop us a note on Facebook and let us listen to it. If we like it, we'll play it. And we do that because we need your authorization to avoid paying those expensive bills that bring on you want to charge for the music. But if you want publicity on this network, you can send it in. Let us listen. I'm Terry Smith, your host of Surviving Head Trauma. Thanks for joining us again on Brain Injury Radio Network. Whether you're listening to us live tonight, Thursday, January 25th, 2024, Ano Domini, or listening to an archived show, thank you for joining us. And we wish you love on this day, whenever this day is when you hear this show. Tonight, we're talking about what you wanted to discuss. And we know that you want to discuss it because you sent us a letter. And then we put it out there and have calculated all the replies and put them on a digitized form so we can talk about it on air tonight. And the first question tonight was, does TBI cause a loss of compassion or empathy? And does that loss create an increase in anger and hate? So we're reading quite a few replies, and then we're going to go on to the next question tonight because we're here until midnight if you're live. And on the switchboard, which many of you are, and not raising your hands if you'd like to join us, but it's fine if you'd like to listen. Just listen as long as you'd like, and we'll do the show as we're doing it. So let's go on to the next person. Let's see. Jane says she gets that way, and that way in this topic tonight has been a lack of empathy, a loss of empathy, if you will, an increase in anger, and a shorter fuse, a quicker reaction time with just hysteria. So we have the general theme tonight of losing the buttons that control reaction quality. So we're working on that. But Jane says, I get like that. Never really thought about it until I joined this group and read about other people like myself. I can understand why things are happening. Thanks. That's a good point, Jane, because sometimes we isolate what's happening to us to ourselves, our own experience, and that becomes our universe, our self-projected totality of this reality. It's only us, no one else, but this is, I'm the only one, becomes our mindset, if you will. Until you expose yourself to other people who may be going through the same situation. Because like we said earlier, multiple people can have the same accident in the same areas of the brain, but it's going to be a different reality for each person because each person is a unique individual with a unique brain pattern, brain set, and mindset. So joining a group, when you hear other people discussing their realities, you might not feel so isolated and infinitely sure that your situation is the worst possible scenario of all possible outcomes. You get to compare your reality with other someone's reality. Comparison is a general no-no. You don't want to go down that hole either. But when you hear that you're not alone, that's not all right. Let's not say comparing our reality, but it's an awareness created by other people who realize that if they share their reality, other people might identify and say, hey, I'm not alone in this. I don't struggle so much by myself. What are these other people doing? What are these other people trying that maybe I haven't tried. So yes, sometimes reaching out within a confined group of people who've been through the same situation sometimes, and sharing, if you will, what works, and comparing notes, if you will, about trial and error, we might better fine-tune our own reality and how we have unwrapped the new person from this traumatic experience. Zach says, yes, something I always strive to work on. Personally, I feel prayer helps me. All right. Well, striving to work on is the first step there, Zach. I mean, if you're striving to work on something, that means that you're making a concerted effort to remedy something that you've qualified as unhealthy. So that's a good start. The fact that you're striving towards something better means that you've identified it and are working on a working strategy. So personally feeling that prayer helps you is ideal. If it personally helps you, then do it. Meditation, prayer, concentrated thought, whatever you'd like to call it, but whatever it is that makes you mentally calmer, takes you to a place of higher power, if you will, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's a mechanism that may work, that will work if you believe it enough. I mean, what is life without belief? And if we believe something so fervently that it transcends us from chaos and madness to tranquil, peaceful reality, then what's wrong with that? Yes, do that. If that helps you, do that. Because there's no right or wrong if the result is an improvement, a better state of mind, a better state of living. Now, Zach comes back and says again, I do pray for an awful lot, but not for compassion. I can work on that, thank you. Well, if you can work on that, that's an excellent, excellent mission, because sometimes not even seeing it is the general reality. We often see traits in other people before we see the traits in ourselves. I'll share a story. Once I was driving, and I remember the story so well because I have told it so many times that it's ingrained in my memory. Repetition helps memory. The more you do something or say something, memory thing will work on that. But I was driving down the street and someone in front of me was driving for miles with a turn signal on. I'm thinking, why is this person driving with a turn signal on? Da 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 da. Of course, I went through a range of emotions. This was early after my trauma, and I was still grasping for ideas on how to tame this new person, how to make this person recognizable as a living person of rational sense. So while I'm engaged with my own mental issues about the level of anger I had for this person driving with a turn signal on, this person finally took an exit, and I too was taking an exit. And for some reason, I looked down to turn my turn signal, but my turn signals were already on. Oh my goodness, I too have been driving down the same distance with my turn signal on. Oh my God, what was I supposed to do with myself? I had been in an argument with myself about the hideous mind of the person in front of me doing that for so long. Why would someone rational person do something so stupid? And my own blinker had been on the whole time. After a while, it didn't hit me until a year. Over the years, I've been analyzing it. There's so many different ways to think about it. I'm starting to talk fast again. I'll slow it down. I'll take a deeper breath. But maybe the person in front of me could have been doing that to make me look down at my own, to show me myself. But I didn't see that. All I saw was the person in front of me with the turn signal. So ever since that moment, ever since then, before jumping on someone else about what they're doing that might be irritating, I check myself first, especially when driving in the turn signal thing. If I see something going on, I look at my own issues first. And that's taken me over quite a few humps in life, because when you look at yourself first, you might prevent yourself from doing something that you're about to jump on someone else for doing. So when those moments of rage come in, or those triggers set you off to do something that feels inherently right, instinctively real and correct, but before you follow that correct instinct, look at yourself first. I look at myself, because I realize that sometimes we don't realize what we're doing. We can't see ourselves as clearly and as objectively as we can see out of our eyes and look at what is in front of us. What our eyes see, we can more easily dismantle and compartmentalize. Looking at ourselves is not quite as easily done. So before we jump down anybody's throat or neck, we should check out our own neck and throats, because we don't know that we're not doing the same thing if we don't. Now, let's talk about what the next person says. Have we reached the end of the list on that one? No, we have more. Let's see. We have Susie. She said, I was 4. No one told me until this year, she's 47, and I have had a lot of head trauma throughout my life. I was 4. So that's not really an answer to the question, Rebecca. I'm sorry, Susan. Let's go to Jeremy. Jeremy says, yes, I feel it. Well, I guess I don't feel it. I get that. So we have quite a few people who understand that of empathy, that lack of compassion after trauma. So it's a matter of dealing with it. Apparently it's not that uncommon to feel that loss or that aggravation of the loss. So it's a matter of coming to terms with it and recognizing ways to make it better. And it appears as if that one is it for that tonight. So let's write. We're going to write TBI. That's cause of apathy. TBI. I'm writing this down because I keep these folders systematically organized. Every file has a place. Every CAU by writing, however, something to be desired. I have a hard time reading my own handwriting. I can only imagine someone else trying to decipher it. That's why digitizing is the way to go. That's the folder for that one. And I'll move it to when it's not been read next time. Now, for the next topic in our last hour, the top of the last hour, it's 11:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, New York, Florida, that area, the whole side of the country. It's 11:02. Now, let's see what else we can talk about tinnight. We have tinnitus is a popular topic. A lot of letters on tinnitus. That's that sound in your ear, that inside your head, the sound inside your head that won't go away, and you think it's going to certainly drive you to madness, to insanity. And we've, of course, read many people who could not deal with it, could not live with it, because it's so maddening that they took their own lives. So we don't toy with that topic. And I don't want to address that right now. Unless you'd like to hear it, call me. Call the station and let me know. Raise your hand if you're already in queue, if you're on the network list here. Just press 1 on your phone, and I'll see a little hand go up on the switchboard, and I'll bring you on live. But if you're not on the switchboard and would like to join the conversation and share your experience or your opinion, we're country code 1, area code 424, and the number is 243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And once you're in queue, press 1. And once you're in queue means once you're through all of the questions and whatever buttons you may have to press to get in line, just press one. Press one and I'll bring you on air. Otherwise, we'll just talk about this the way we're doing it tonight. Just your letters and my reading them and sharing them with you. Now, let's talk about wife of... No, that's again, tinnitus. So many tinnitus questions here. We'll talk about that. But I want to cover... Do TBI people have any friends left? Ah, let's see what the actual question says. That was the name of the folder. Let's open one here. They open the primary question starts with how many people actually hang alone or have very few friends? I'll wait. All right. Let's see what the general answer is. I'm an introvert. I can start with this one. I can answer this one pretty easily. I love people, but I prefer to observe them from afar, if you will, or interact like this. Sitting at my desk in my studio here is perfectly comfortable for me. I'm alone in this office, and unless I have a guest host who is doing a live show with me, and we have two systems set up and work together, I can do this alone just fine. In fact, I'm much of a loner. I'm more of an introvert than extrovert. And what's funny is that before my trauma, I was an extreme extrovert. I mean, an outgoing officer of Marines. And, well, that changed after the brain trauma, end of the career, the future of that career, and my reality of being an extrovert. I became so much more of an introvert. And many of us can relate to that because I've talked with so many people over the years, and it happens. And then I've also seen it the other way. People have talked about being introverted prior to the trauma, and then afterwards this new person emerges who is a hound for extroversion, the whole nine lights and candles and fireworks and all the people and everything that comes along with being an extrovert. So again, it's a matter of how the cards are dealt in our reality. But Casey starts out with this one, and it's, in fact, let me go back so I can write down here. How many people, the next one is, that was number two tonight, is how many people hang alone? How many people, LP, hang alone, have very few friends? Have few friends or none. Okay, well, I, first of all, have to define friends. I know a lot of people defining friends. That's a tough one because sometimes people you don't know online may be a better friend, if you will, because of your ability to communicate with them and share things with them you might not share with someone who lives in your house. So they're varying degrees of the word friend. So we have to, I guess, this maybe mean people in our lives we can count on when we need someone to listen or share and are there for someone else? Is there someone we are there for who needs us to listen or help them through whatever the moment? So Casey says, I just have my kid. I've been trying to be social but can't actually get myself to reach out to those who are trying to be my friend. I can't start a conversation and keep it going. I'll just stop and never talk to them again. Then it's too late to say anything, so I just worry about it forever without ever saying anything to them. Gosh, Casey, that sounds familiar. You're certainly not alone in that one. I mean, I can read journals that take me back to situations when I thought, oh my goodness, like when I was younger and a pretty girl would come in and all I have to do is say something, say hello, say hi, but no, that first word just won't come out. It just won't. You sit there and you stand there silent, just hearing this magnificent sound of all the noise in our head from tinnitus, and then everything else is just dead, and then the word won't come out. Nothing comes out. That happens, Casey. You're not alone in that one. Hopefully we, in time, learn skills to overcome those moments, because sometimes they slip away and you never get that opportunity again. It happens. It does happen. Now, we've opened a new topic. We're going to talk about how people do people, do you hang alone? I have a few friends or none? And we're going to talk about that one after another word from our Brain Injury Association of America.
Imagine not knowing the difference between a hairbrush, a toothbrush, or a paintbrush, or forgetting which goes on first, your shoes or your socks. More than 2.5 million children and adults sustain traumatic brain injuries in the United States each year. If you or someone close to you has experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. Get the help you need today. Call the Brain Injury Association at 1-800-444-6443 or on the web at biausa.org.
BIAUSA.org, Brain Injury Association of America. If you're in the United States, this is the organization to help you get started in the right direction, because there's probably a chapter near you. Look them up. BIAUSA.org. Thank you for joining us again. I'm Terry Smith, your host of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. It's 11:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and if you'd like to call us, it's not too late. Phone number 424-243-9540. If you're already on the switchboard, a lot of you are, I see you, raise your hand by pressing 1 on your phone. Tonight we're discussing letters that you've sent us and comments. People have replied to your letters, and we're sharing it. So join us in the conversation. And remember, you can always send us a letter, because some nights we spend doing just this, talking about letters that you've sent in, comments you've made, and topics you'd like to hear us discuss. So send us a letter. Facebook direct message is one way. Terry at terrysmithbooks.com is another way. On the website, terrysmithbooks.com. You can also write to us on braininjuryradionetwork.com. Check us out with your thoughts and comments. Casey just told us that she can't start a conversation, and I shared with you how I understand Casey, because I have been there. I have been there. I think many of us have been there enough to make this a viable topic that can sustain itself, because we can contribute a lot of personal experience to this same matter, the same moment, the same reality, this home, the same ghost that jumps on our backs when we want to say something in the right moment, in the right time, but this ghost makes us as quiet as deep space, although deep space is probably a little more sound than we might think. So we don't know. We don't know yet. Nancy says, I've always been somewhat a loner. I don't go anywhere. I have very few friends or visitors. The older I get, I'm okay with that. My daughter helps me so much. There's no way I could say thank you enough. Well, Nancy, it sounds as if trauma didn't affect you so much. You say you've always been a loner, so it may not have been trauma-induced, but your own natural character, your personality, your your gene pool, if you will. I don't go anywhere. I don't have many friends or visitors. So it's not necessarily something that happens after trauma. If we're born with that way and then trauma happens and it doesn't change us very much, we're still who we are. So we're just being ourselves. And if having few people around means that you're content, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we see ads on television and newspapers or newspaper, the internet, or anywhere we see images, and it's groups, large groups of people, lots of people together congregated in fun, laughter, and just having the grand time isn't always the best place. If that's not your speed, then drive in your own lane, if you will, not the passing lane. You don't have to drive in the fast lane. You can move over to the middle lane or the slow lane. Or if it's a two-lane road and you don't have a choice, just do the best you can until you get to a bigger road where you can do your own thing. Meanwhile, don't worry about it if you have few friends, no friends, or visitors. It's okay. You said that you have your daughter, and there's no way to thank her enough. Okay, well, that one person, without you putting too much pressure on that person to be your world, can that person handle the responsibility for being your only person? If you have someone who says, yeah, I can be your only person, I can be your world, that's fine. If it's sincere, that person's not acting the part to pacify you. But at the same token, is that happening and you're allowing it because you don't want to broaden your base of other people? Is your daughter carrying a burden that she doesn't want to share with you because she doesn't want to hurt your feelings? I don't know. Maybe you won't know if you don't do some type of deeper analysis, because you sometimes inadvertently or without conscious effort or meaning you do things that do put other people in a position that would otherwise be turned away if you weren't maybe their daughter or their mother or their sister or their cousin or their whoever. Position makes them feel that you don't care, don't mind that you're there because you want to be. That very well may be the case. And if that is the case, then that's even better. But if it's not the case, we should check it, at least with a little more investigation, and find out so that we don't limit ourselves to someone who's acting through rather than someone who is sincerely there for us. Because it does matter. And in the long run, it could be dangerous for the relationship. So thank you, Nancy, for sharing that with us. But we hope that you are listening tonight, and if not tonight, to an archived show, at least you hear the idea that you might want to verify that you're not putting too much pressure on your daughter if she's your only person, because sometimes that only person can feel the burden that they hide because they realize they're the only person, and that's not healthy. Sandra says, me too. I don't like being told where I should and shouldn't go. Not sure what that means, Sandra, but I get the idea. You like your independence, and I'm sorry. I'm my mind went back just now to empathy. All of a sudden, I'm doing empathy again. Is that a traumatic brain injury thing, or is that just a Terry Smith moment? Here we are. Sandra, we're talking about friends. Do you have them, or do you hang alone? So, yes, your comment makes perfectly good sense now. Me too. I don't like being told where I should go and shouldn't go. So you're a loner, and you're saying that your solitude allows you freedom, that being a part of a group or mass production would otherwise dictate where you go, what you do, and how you do it. I completely get that. Yeah, I get it now. it's sometimes, yeah, a freeing tool to be without so many personal friends and people. I mean, because sometimes going with the flow of the group may not be of your own best interest. So it's a tough one. There's a fine line between not having enough support system in your life to not having the right support system in your life. Because if you have someone like your relative or companion who is there because they realize there's no one else, that burden might one day turn into resentment, and then you have no one because you've created a situation that isn't sustainable, isn't strong enough, big enough to last the time that it takes to live through this journey. You might live longer than that patience can last. So, Sandra, we do understand you don't like being told when to do things and how to do them, so you don't necessarily need other people. You make your own decisions. That's not unhealthy. It's not, until you become too lonely and have a broken heart. So we wish you love. Mary says, I worked for the same business for 15 years and was betrayed by the people I thought were friends. So yes, now I'd rather be by myself. Let's not throw out the entire pot of coffee because we poured a little bit into a cup that had a hole in it. We don't need to throw out the whole pot of coffee because you poured some of the coffee into a cup that had a hole in it. That cup springs leak and you get hot coffee somewhere. That's the cup. The coffee's still fine. We don't need to throw out the cup. The coffee, because one cup is bad, get a new cup. So maybe the business, after 15 years, betrayed you. It doesn't mean that you can't find another business that will satisfy you and adore you. So you don't want to say you'd rather be by yourself because you had a bad experience with one organization or one person or one business or one anything, because one sample from a group is not a very good idea of what that group represents or what the possibilities of that group could be, because one sample is one sample. It's not a measurable picture of that group. So let's not let one bad day make us think we have a bad life, or one bad date make us think that it's never going to work as a relationship, because one sample is not a good picture of the whole. So let's try a little bit more investigation, a little bit more attention, if you will. All right, let's try Carol. Let's try, oops, went too far. Let's go back to Carol. And let's back up a little bit. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get this screen, which is so sensitive, just barely moving my fingers makes it move to the next page. All right, now I understand where we are. Let's start with Braun. Braun says, my wife and daughter, that's all I need. Can't count on others except for family. Well, Braun, I'm glad that you have a source of support, someone you can count on, your wife and daughter. Okay, you have two people, but you again, we don't want to limit ourselves, because if we limit ourselves to something and say, okay, absolutely nothing or anyone else, we might find ourselves limited in our life experience. Oftentimes we think that we're at the end of our road of the way life is going to be. It's going to be this way for the duration of this journey, this ride. And we find ourselves fulfilling that prophecy because we don't get outside of that lane, and we don't fully engage in the potential of our lives on this planet in this experience of life. So we get a one-dimensional ride through space and time. And if that's fine and you want to leave this planet with that one-dimensional view, then don't worry about growth and development. But one day we're going to die. So the question, I mean, everyone's going to die. Everyone and every living thing on this planet is going to die of something. So the question then becomes and is, how do you want to live? How do you want to live? We're all going to die. How do you want to live? And if you want to live a dynamic life of experience and emotions, sometimes we have to leave that shell we create for ourselves, that boundary we build because of one bad company, one business that we worked for 15 years did us wrong, so therefore I won't trust or let anyone else in ever again. Suddenly our life experience is no longer a full life experience, but a one-dimensional view of what we've chosen as our direction. And again, if that's what you want and you're okay with that, it's your life that you will have missed, except for the bliss you find in your absence expanding. So let's see what Robin says. Robin says, I am mainly by myself. I don't have any true friends. Well, Robin, true friends are hard to define because, I mean, friend is really an action word. We use it to describe maybe who this person is next to us. But the word to me, friends, is like the word love. It's an action word. Those words can be said and articulated, but I think the action behind what we say is more relevant and better defines those words. I mean, the action defines it, but it's up to us to recognize those actions as love and as trust, if you will. The actions define those words. Action, those are action words. So I don't have any true friends. Friends, actions. Friends help each other somehow. Sometimes just listening. Someone who's going to listen to you without judging you and letting you vent, if you will. That's a friend. That's an action. That's an action someone's taking to demonstrate friendship. So if you don't have any true friends, I mean, sometimes it's a semantic thing. What's a true friend? Someone who's there for you when you need someone you want to have fun with, who's there to laugh with you, someone who can help you better understand yourself and help you grow as a person, help you have fun when it's time to have fun, someone to experience your joys, your sadness, your growth, your setbacks, the whole you. So, Robin, when you say I'm mainly by myself, I don't have any true friends, is that because of choice? Is that because you've been hurt by one other person or a series of people who have made you think that the series will continue? No. You don't stop trying, because when we stop trying, we die. And sometimes people want to die. I understand that. I mean, sometimes life isn't the parade we hope. Sometimes it's a funeral procession. So it's sad, but it's up to us to find other avenues, other venues to exercise our life potential. And if our venue is isolation, and we're not happy, then maybe we need to shop around a different venue, about maybe learning to communicate better, to open up, to trying again, and not let that distrust consume us and destroy us emotionally. Carol says, that would be me as well. I've lost trust in people. Well, you guys aren't really helping with this. It sounds as if a lot of us have been through disarming realities that make us just shut down and not try to evaluate anymore. But that must be the isolating choice we could make, to just totally not try again with new people or different people, if you will, because of what other people have done to us in the past, or our interactions have left us in the past. The past is just that, the past. So if our future is to be anything different, it's up to us to find a way to reach outside of the familiar and expand our trust, to let trust try again, because sometimes it's simply a matter of finding the right person, the right group of people. So Carol, a different Carol, comes in and says, me, I have a small circle of friends who I would do anything for, and vice versa. I'll guarantee if you have loads of friends, then they are most likely not true friends. Plus, I'm not really a people person. I prefer dogs. Well, this Carol, you may have a point. I mean, you say a small circle of friends. I understand that, because sometimes you've heard the old saying, what is it? Everybody in your circle is not in your corner. So if you have a large group of people, chances are mathematically there's some variable in that equation that's going to be difficult or not in the best interest of finding the answer, or harder to making finding the answer harder, because it's such a complex variable. You have so many people, there's bound to be, yeah, someone in that group not quite rooting for everybody to find the answer. They want to keep the equation difficult, complicated, unsolvable. So we may not do as well with large groups of people. That's fine. Some people do. Some people prefer larger groups, because you don't necessarily have to focus on any one person, but get lost in the abstract feeling of everyone, all these people. But I think the majority of us don't. We tend to thrive better, closer to singular self, if you will. But we want to open up at least enough to have maybe a few people who make us feel comfortable enough to be ourselves, to tune in to ourselves, if you will, and allow ourselves to let that person in, to get to know someone else as well. Victoria says, small circle of friends, more like family, to be honest. I also love my own company. I'm social and antisocial. Victoria, I completely get that. Yes, small circle of friends, closer than family sometimes. And to be honest, I love my own company, and I'm social and antisocial. Yes, social in the right moment, and other moments, totally not going to do it. Perfectly fine. Perfectly understandable. So there's not a one way. We don't have to be an introvert or an extrovert. Sometimes we're an introvert, sometimes we're an extrovert. Depends on the situation. So we don't necessarily have to define ourselves. There's not a must in that sentence that we have to understand everything. So let's see. Chris, Braun, we started with Don Braun, Victoria. Now, Melissa says, me, I don't even have a few friends. I only get human interaction at work other than that, people don't talk to me. Well, Melissa, it doesn't sound as if you're totally against the idea. It sounds as if you're in a situation that doesn't facilitate that or afford you that opportunity. So maybe it's a matter of finding social groups or organizations, maybe searching the internet for groups in my neighborhood, groups in my area. What do you like? What do you like to do? I mean, board games, walking, hiking, chess, backgammon, something. Maybe you can do reading, book clubs, something that you're interested in. Flowers, plants. There's cooking. There's usually a group to accommodate your own interests. So it's a matter of reaching out and finding someone or groups who enjoy the same things. So thank you for commenting. And we hope that you get out of that shell, because it doesn't sound as if you really want to be there, but that's simply a matter of circumstance that put you there. So with that, we're going to listen to some music. Let's have a music break. We'll come back to this question. Do you hang around people or are you a loner? How do you deal with it? Well, let's try another song. Let's try Rat Bat Blue. Check them out on YouTube too, because they're one of my favorites. I like them. Meanwhile at Home, Just You or X. Let's try Just You, Rat Bat Blue. I'm Terry Smith on Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Thank you. Just You by Rat Bat Blue. Check them out on YouTube or iTunes or wherever you'd like to get music, because they have quite a few songs that might make you feel good too, like Just You. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Sometimes it's just you, somebody special. Sometimes if we make sure that person is not carrying a burden he or she doesn't want to carry, but they're only doing it because they're just a caring person, a compassionate person, and they're carrying a weight on their shoulder that might later turn into resentment. We don't want that to happen. So we investigate with things like observation, notes on situations, make us see things more clearly. So we pay attention. But if we choose someone and we find that it's a reciprocated, returned love, something that a caring emotion, we're grateful. Because sometimes we don't have a lot of people, a great number of people, if you will, but only a select few. Those few people become our world, and we treasure them more than they probably understand. And to those people, we say thank you, we love you, and hopefully we can be that person for someone. And we all have someone, and it's a good, genuine reality, not a facade of some kind. Because the more we read, the more we see, people feel as if it's not sincere in relationships and involvements. So to those relationships that are real and genuine, we say thank you and love. Now, let's see what Nikki has to say. Nikki says, me. I have put myself out for too many people who turn their backs at the click of a finger. All I need is my family. Best to keep your circle small. Keep the snakes out. It's a lot of cynicism going on around here in this, but it's our reality. So that's the cynicism is the temperament and the mood of the day of this time. Well, then apparently we need to find a way to focus on something that can take the gloom away. This doom isn't the end. This doom and gloom is certainly temporary. This ride, this journey through space and time on this planet has to be more dynamic than just this, I'm an isolationist because people suck. People are horrible. I don't trust anyone anymore because people are divinely evil. What does that mean? I mean, something has to give. This is something that we, if worked on, can be better in this game of life, this reality of life, this improvised journey that often is our reality day by day. Each day is improvised, an improvisation. You ever say something and it doesn't quite sound like the right word? Is improvisation, this random world, this random unfolding of reality in front of us, this constantly changing world, somewhere in it is peace. And the people, and there's peace with the trusting these people. So it's a matter of us finding, I think, the right people. Sometimes it's not about people being bad or good, but the right people being in our lives that make us perceive good or bad, feel what people are capable of doing or being. So it's about finding, I think, the right combination, the right mixtures of people. And whether we're an introvert or an extrovert, if we have the right people around us, we have the right tools in which to develop a sustainable level of peace and happiness that will get us through this journey, brain trauma or not. Chris says, I was always a people person, more comfortable with company. But since being ill with anxiety, PTSD, and depression, I prefer my own company more and more. I'm actually doing a lot better after some good treatment, still on meds and have off days. Well, Chris, yeah, you sound like the pre-trauma extrovert, trauma introvert. Okay, that's fine. That's something we can relate to and understand. And you sound as if you have a healthy approach to it. So there are going to be good days and bad days. And you're on meds. Okay, if that helps. Sounds as if you're on a good path. And we can maybe listen to Chris about finding a balance. There's some pretty bad people who suck out there in this world, but there are also some people who shine, who gleam with just their presence, and those are the people who make our stars rise and our sun shine. So knowing that they exist, I think, gives us better foundation for hope, a valid stand to take in knowing that we don't need or must, we don't have to take this journey alone because of some unfortunate break in our brain, some mishap with our neurons, some kind of crash in our skull that resulted in something that makes us no longer want to give man a chance, other people the opportunity to further make us embrace the idea that people are not good. So we must find what we want. And if we want more than what we have, we must find comfort in going outside of our boundaries, if you will, our self-imposed limitations. We all have them to varying degrees, certainly, but we regardless of our degree or level of denial that we can find happiness, we, at the same token, must be open. Otherwise, we become cornered into this box, this self-fulfilling prophecy. If we believe doom, we attract doom and we live in doom. So if that's all we hear, believe and see, we need to change our environment maybe, or at least our mindset, because certainly trauma didn't make us die. Sometimes we wish we may have died. We may wish we have died, had died, were dead. But again, we don't judge the whole life based on a chapter of life or a day in the life or even a week or a month in the life or a year in the life, because life is ever unfolding and growing. So when we resolve ourselves to say, we can do better, we will. It's mindset over circumstance, because circumstance can be different depending upon our mindset and our thought process. Stephen says he sat in the pub and he's on his own, hoping he doesn't bump into anyone he knows. His first time out in ages, and he's very much a recluse. He loves being on his own. So he's out in public. Ah, Stephen is trying to get a little of both. Out in public, I can relate to this. I went through a long phase of my life like this. I liked being out in public, as long as I didn't have to interact with anyone, especially someone I knew. Running to them in public would be the worst thing because that would make me have to speak out of my preferred comfort zone of silence in public, just observing in public. Being around people without interacting with people, that's an old familiar song. Yeah, I know that one, Stephen. And sometimes that's enough. And for me, for the longest time, that was enough until I realized that I wasn't experiencing enough because as a writer, and that's what I do, I became a writer after my brain trauma and my career as a Marine ended because I was no longer physically fit to serve our country as a Marine. But the creative writing was always a part, and it became more enhanced with the therapy of working on memory deficit, writing things happening throughout the day, a journal, if you will, led to the writing. So as a writer, yeah, I would love to go out in public and observe human nature, observe how people interacted with each other, observe how they walked, observe the conversations they held with each other, observe their reactions to each other. And it was good. And so I realized I wasn't actually a participant. I was more of an observer. I was a writer on a set and not a person in the audience living. So again, it's about mindset and discovering the issue, recognizing the problem, the conflict, and then conflict resolution. So Stephen, I do understand that, and as you said, you love being on your own, and being on your own in public can be rewarding, can be satisfying. I do understand that. And maybe that's a good start. If you are such an introvert, so introverted that you don't have a desire to be personally close to people, try starting with maybe going somewhere where people are gathered and observe. Do your own thing within that experience. And after a while of seeing how people interact, how they carry on, if you will, you might grow closer to participating a little bit more each time. Tracy says, on my own most of the time, my anxiety is problem. Tracy, I understand. Most of us here can understand anxiety is an issue. That's one of those top tier consequences of surviving brain trauma. Anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, G-A-D, generalized anxiety disorder. We've probably seen that on our charts. Many of us up there with anger and memory deficit. But yeah, anxiety. So yeah, most of your time on your own is understandable with that anxiety. It can be a killer. But knowing that it can be a killer, if you want to live, again, mindset. We work on mindset internally and take steps to working on being in public with other people. Sarah says, always hang by myself. I don't have any true best friends. I have a hard time trusting everybody. Well, we're on a theme here tonight. Thanks, Sarah. We are rolling with 3 minutes left with tonight's episode. I'd like to thank everyone who's listening live. I can see you on the switchboard here who have called in. For those of you listening through some other means, which there are many to hear this podcast, this radio live broadcast, thank you for tuning in live. And again, we have 3 minutes left. So if you'd like to comment, press 1 on your phone if you're in the studio with us. We can maybe get you on and have a comment. Otherwise, feel free to write us. And we've talked about different ways. Facebook direct page on Surviving Head Trauma is a definite route because every morning we're posting something on that page. And it's a matter of just scrolling through the note, the direct messages to find what you would like to discuss or comments you may have about a previous episode. And you can find all the archived episodes on the website, terrysmithbooks.com. And you can also find all of my other writings there. Not all of my other writings, but many of my other writings, the books, the plays, the short stories. And I think there's a list. Yeah, there is definitely a link page if you'd like to find other resources for guiding you through this journey of surviving head trauma. So there are links to take you to professionals, to organizations, to groups, and hopefully keep you focused on improving and growing. Let's see. Cassandra, one more comment here. Cassandra says, me, I have just three good friends and have my best buddy and our dog, Trixie. I have a hard time trusting people. I just hang out by myself and with my best buddy, our dog. All right, that's it for tonight. Cassandra, thank you. We get the idea. Many of us have survived head trauma to find ourselves surviving alone because of either distrust of people or anxiety or our own inability to reach out. So if that's the case with you and you'd like to change it, it starts with making that conscious decision. And once you make the decision, somehow the universe, and as Pollyanna as that sounds, it's not, it's real. You make the decision, somehow the world stands up and starts presenting you with opportunities to make what you want come true. Does TBI make us have a lack of empathy? And are you a loner or an extrovert? Two topics tonight. You brought them to us, and we will bring anything you bring to us to the air. Reach out to us. With that, I'm going to say good night. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Join us again next month, the fourth Thursday of each month, 10 p.m. until midnight Eastern Standard Time. Thank you for joining us. And again, whether you're listening to us live or to an archived show, thank you for joining us and wish you love. I'm Terry Smith, your host. Good night.